Welcome to DragonCon 2015 Ingress panel.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is our about third year with this panel, I think, something like that. For those of you who were here last year, you notice we actually have the big room now and can fit everybody in, and you're not sitting in each other's laps. Thank you, Scott, for making that happen. So a couple introductions, just because I have the mic at the moment. John Stocks, Agent Tromeo, local to Atlanta, going to be moderating the panel. And I guess we'll just start to the far right and just work our way down, or left for you.
Wendy, agent name is Ladybird ATL. Obviously, with the ATL, I'm local.
That was it?
That's all you remember? That was it.
All right.
That's all you get.
I'm Randall Schwartz. I've only been playing for about a year. I'm only a level 9. I'm sorry. But my my clan name is Randall Schwartz. It's easy to find.
And hi, my name's Ilanka, and I've been playing Ingress for a few years.
Hello, my name is Linda. I'm Agent Portalist in game. I'm the Resistance. And I now work for Niantic Labs.
And I am Chris, Agent Science Tour 2. I've been playing since my freshman year in college, so about 3 years now, and I'm level 15, local Atlanta.
So we've got a mixed, diverse group of players of all different levels and experience, but and Linda didn't talk herself up enough, so I'm going to at least mention, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years ago, Niantic did a event where they had the players around the globe vote in their elite five from around the globe, most of influential players in their communities, the global community, and everything else, and Linda was one of the ones that was chosen. And so, top of the top five.
Girl power.
And then, as now with Niantic, specifically helping with conventions and player relations.
That's correct. We do Comic-Cons all across the country and panels like this at Comic-Con. So if you do go to a future Comic-Con, always be on the lookout for an Ingress panel. It's a great way to hook up with the local Ingress community at a con.
So next, I want to find out a little bit about our audience. How many people here have never played Ingress? You're here just because you heard about
join it. Us. Join us. Join Fresh us.
For those of you, there are some cards that should probably be in your seat that have some info on how to get the game and how to get started.
Yep, and after this panel, we're actually having another gathering as a social gathering upstairs, this hotel, 19th floor landing. It's for everybody to do story swaps and recruitment, and because we will not be able to cover everything in an hour. That's one thing I definitely have learned over the years. We will not be able to cover it all, but I'm going to try my best.
Every Ingress player has their fish story, and we like to hear them.
So. We have an hour. Oh, upstairs, right after this. This ends at 8, and I'm planning on just caravanning it up there. 8:15, 8:30, we'll be rocking it. How many people here have played less than a month?
At a time.
All right. How many people a month to 3 months? Awesome. Welcome.
Yay.
You've just gotten your feet wet. Promise you. You think you know it all. 6 months or less.
Or less?
Say 3 months to 6 months. iOS users, I'm guessing. We welcome the iOS users. There's no. I was glad when iOS came out. That was about 80% of my friend circles.
We have abolished the segregation, so.
1 year. You've been playing for at least a year.
Wait, you didn't cover 6 months to a year.
Okay, 6 months to a year. Wendy, I think you started at DragonCon last year, didn't you?
I started the week after DragonCon.
A week after. Okay, more than a year. Our veterans.
Wow.
Okay, we have a lot of you. Thank you for coming out. Because you probably think there's nothing in this panel that you don't already know.
I'm just curious. How many people have been playing all 3 years?
Wow. You guys have some awesome resonators I need. I know that. We'll see afterwards.
So to get things started, because I know a big question that everybody has is that here recently, Google has changed to Alphabet. They are turning themselves into a conglomerate of sorts of different smaller businesses, and that affects Niantic. Everybody wants to know how that's going to affect us. Linda, can you give us a little bit of detail? I know you can't cover too much.
Right. There's not too much I can say right now because it's still in process. I can tell you that they are not part of the Alphabet. They have gone independent. Google is an investor, so they're still involved with Google. We haven't, completely split from Google. And there's going to be also other new investors that are very, very exciting. And you'll be hearing about that, I'm sure, in the next couple months. Watch the news. And they're planning. We have two anomalies in the works right now. We have this weekend, actually tomorrow, we have over 120 First Saturday events taking place around the world, from Nepal to Tokyo, you name it. And you can see that on, if you go to ingress.com/events, you can see all of the events and see if there's one near you. And it's always on the first Saturday of every month. We usually have at least 100 events around the world. We also have mission days in the works. I believe it was around 20 in October and 20 in November. And so, and then we also have an anomaly event happening in November in New Orleans. Yes.
Yeah. The name of that?
And then who's going to New Orleans?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. And then in December, we're going to be in San Francisco Bay Area. Who's going to San Francisco?
Much better weather.
I'm going to New Orleans and San Francisco. And those are a blast. And so we're going, everything's happening. There's a lot going on. We're moving forward just as we always have, and look forward to whatever comes next. So it's exciting time. It's exciting time to be an Ingress player.
So much more information than that. I'm sorry, we may not be able to answer your questions. So when we do get to Q&A later, keep that in mind. For new players, obviously there's a lot of, I think most of the new players are on this side of the room. That's why my head seems to tilt this way. Sorry. There is a lot of information that you can get from the website, and it's on the cards, and that will get you started. One of those things that a lot of veteran players, some get involved in, some don't. Some care about it, some don't. But that's the backstory. So my next question to each of our panelists is, what is your favorite part of the backstory? Wendy, you want to start us off?
So I'm on the far end of the really don't care about the backstory camp. I know that we're green, and they're blue, and there might be aliens involved, and that's about the extent of the attention that I paid to the backstory.
So my place is position is just, there's a backstory?
I like just the art of it. I like the idea of the castles or the sculptures out there, and so, some of the early videos, really nice production value videos, the idea of just kind of energy around sculptures in the area. And that part of the backstory I really like. Whether it's blue or green, I don't care.
My favorite part of the backstory is when I go to events, and how many people here have read a book and then had their character actually talk to them from their book? And I love that about this, is that the characters in the backstory will jump out and appear at events, and you can talk to them. And so there is this alternate reality it kind of pulls you into. And the way that we actually win or lose at an anomaly affects that character's future. So they're there to encourage us so that they can survive. And it's really kind of exciting because most books you don't get that kind of interaction with the characters. So a whole new dimension to storytelling.
Yeah, I am a fan of the fact that the backstory is there. I'm partially towards the camp of there's a backstory, but at the same time, when you go to anomalies and you hear something in the Ingress report or something like that about this character has just done this, and then you can go to a primary anomaly and that character can walk right up to you, hand you a card, and all of a sudden there's a logo on your scanner that says, I just met this person in person, and that means that I got involved with the story. That's a really cool thing to do.
I have to say, if you haven't been to an anomaly and gone to a primary site, as I've said, meeting the characters that actually are talked about in the stories, actually there in person, and they are quality actors playing these parts, and they are really into this just as much as you would hope they are. And that's really cool to me.
What? They're actors? I thought it was all real.
Ingress is not a game. It's a lifestyle.
Yes.
It's the most expensive free game I have ever played.
It was almost like church. There was a chant and response.
So one of the things we're going to go into, but I know we have a lot of veterans in the room, so bear with me, is we're going to talk a little bit about gameplay and the basics, and we're going to go into some advanced stuff. Basics for the new players, there are portals that are these...
Portals.
Murals and statues and gathering places and historical significance and other things that people deem to be important.
Like garden gnomes.
Like garden gnomes, lawn gnomes.
A lot of churches, a lot of dead people.
And you can interact with them. They're places of interest. But one of the things that's out there is this energy called XM. You interact with the energy. It allows you to do different things with these portals. You capture them. You modify them. You deploy, interact, destroy, all the different things that the tutorial will go through. And it will also teach you about links and fields. And in my opinion, I don't know about anybody else's, but the links and fields are the most beautiful part of this game. And
the bigger the better.
I think we wanted to do a little demonstration to help understand how this works.
We have a project here for you guys.
Let's get this started. We're going to need some volunteers.
We need some volunteers. We need three volunteers, one on each corner, probably. So, first I need three volunteers. Let's see. How long is your screen?
Guy in red in the back over there.
Okay. And can... Okay, the person that you just selected. If you could stand at this pole right here. And... yeah, go ahead. Okay. If you could stand at that pole. You guys are going to be portals. We've got a lot of mine units in this room, okay. So we're going to capture them.
Are we going to do resonators too? Resonators around each one?
Do we have some resonators?
I have resonator cards.
Okay. Well, so the first thing you have to do if you want to... Do we need a third person?
Yes, we need a third person.
We need one more volunteer. Red hat.
Yeah. My favorite kind of Linux.
It's definitely one of the better ones. Okay, so when you're so the first thing you've got to do when you're creating a field, if you're a new player and you've never played before, you might not know this. All our veterans are probably aware of this, but when you want to make a field, the first thing you've got to do is capture a portal. So now, right now, all of these people are neutral portals. There's no resonators on them. They're just kind of standing there. So
here it goes.
Throw your phone at it.
So
online.
One resonator. So what I'm going to do is capture this portal with my phone, and I'm going to put eight resonators around it. And resonators, you get, first I hack that portal, and it gives me a bunch of inventory. And in that inventory are resonators. I'd like to think of them as kind of like antennas that are going to resonate at a certain frequency. And so I have to have eight of them, all of them full. There's eight slots, and I have to fill all eight slots, and I go around the portal, put all eight on, and once it's live, a link button will appear, because now it's functional portal and it can link. And so I go to the other portal and I hack it.
Can you get a key?
Resonators all the way around this portal, hack it. I get a portal key.
Ooh.
This is really important, so remember that. Yeah, I get a portal key from each one of these portals.
So then I would go to the next portal.
Three blocks over, behind a fence, across a river.
Yeah. With poor signal.
That's lucky.
Never. Yeah. Now, if I'm short key and I don't have that key and I'm over here and I run into her in the street and I say, oh my God, I need a key for that. Do you have one?
And I'll pick it up.
That's
why
you
never do that.
It does. In office events, you literally like walk way far away from anybody there is. You're going up towards to drop that key. So can I pick me up and now I've got keys for all of these. So then what I do is I want to throw a link. So I click the link button and it'll tell me what I have a portal key for, which I have a portal key for that portal. So I can use the portal or that portal. If I didn't have the portal key, it wouldn't show that portal was available. So I do have the portal key, so I'm
going to
go ahead and link. So
if
you could just...
Yeah. Ooh, BDSM.
Okay. No coffee.
I made a link. Okay.
Like magic.
213 points in the game.
Yes.
You gotta say good work because I'm getting accepted. So now I go here, I have a portal key for there, so when I hit link, I can see that portal and I say link to that portal and a link goes flying over there.
Look at that link flying!
Now,
run, John, run!
On our intel map, the other team can see what
distance exceeded.
They see these links go up and they go, at this point, there's a. Oh!
Oh!
Stop her, you know, we gotta stop her. So people are getting out of their pajamas and getting into their clothes.
Get the kids out of bed, put them in the car seats.
No, we've never gotten our pajamas.
We've never.
Before Joe down there comes, and you could have to be physically out of the portal. I cannot hit this portal from over there. So if somebody is over here and they're we're both heading the same way, I gotta beat them over here to this portal to get that link made. Sometimes, if it's really far, this can be, what's the farthest link someone's made here? Anybody made more than 400 miles?
1,187 kilometers.
Wow. Wow.
So my lane is now clear of all links, and I can have her. I can link, but I hit the link button. Which is this is her link.
Oh, here comes the link button.
And this entire area inside here will turn
green. Green.
Green.
And I get 1 point for every person under that field. So all of you guys, I've now captured your mind.
It's not hard at DragonCon.
It's a blue field, so she has freed your minds.
So if we were to count everybody up here. So if we were to count up everything, Linda would have just gotten 25 mind units for capturing the minds. For either one side or the other, either protecting them from the aliens or embracing the aliens, whatever the storyline says.
Try to imagine making this triangle 4,000 miles long or kilometers long.
So for those of you who may not have heard what Linda was talking about earlier, it isn't. If there's another link through that line that you see of these strings, that you can't throw that link. So in this small a space, that's not a big deal. We don't have much going on. But you're throwing across the world across the globe, and you've got the curvature of the Earth to take into account and everything else, there's a lot of link possibilities.
So you're going to make friends 4,000 miles away so that they can clear a link for you when you're making that 4,000-mile link, and there's something in the way. You can you get on Hangouts, and you say, hey, get up. I need a link cleared. We're going to make this big field. And they will get up and drive or go wherever to where that portal is and clear that. Has anybody done link clearing here? Great. How far have you driven to go clear a link?
All the way.
4 hours.
4 hours. So link clearing is very important. And so you need to make friends all over the world so that you can make big, giant fields. And so this game, now all of a sudden, you have friends all over the world.
Thank you to our volunteers. Thanks for standing up here. Sorry you didn't get to throw the balls. If you want to bring those up to me.
Do they get like cool mods for doing this?
Yes, I have. With the three, with my portal people, please come up. I got something for you.
Toys.
Where's my?
So another thing to note on fields is once that field goes up, you cannot link underneath that field.
You should have told me about this.
Not true.
So once that field goes up, there is no more linking underneath it. So any other portals underneath that. So those big global fields that we're talking about. Those big global fields pretty much put a lockdown on any further fields, links, or anything being thrown.
It was fun. Oh, I handed it to you.
Thanks, Sketch.
People are dropping keys.
And there are some other basics. I mentioned mods. There's several different versions of mods that can let you throw links farther. It can help defend the portals, adding shields and attacks and other things, which you'll learn as you engage through. I won't go into too many details. If you have any more questions about the basics of the game, I encourage you to come join us at the Fireside Chat afterwards upstairs, and there will be plenty of people who will tell you what side is the right side to join. It's going to change depending on who you're talking to, and the real answer is any of them. Just join us.
I also will have some swag for anybody who would like some swag.
Yep, and we'll have swag to hand out and all that stuff.
Ingress, there's a second game in Ingress called Swag. And it's a game within a game.
So next, I have some questions about advanced play for our panelists. What advanced tactics do you use to attack a portal held by the other faction? Chris, kick us off this time.
Okay, so it depends on whether they are actually actively at the portal, defending it. A lot of times, what I will do is I will, if it's got no mods, there's not really a challenge. You just roll up and you just start blasting. But a lot of times, they're going to be sitting on something like 4 Axis shields, which are the most powerful shield in the game. And you've got to somehow get through all of those with 4 guys recharging on you. And you've got 2 basic options. You can try and get out of your car and stand directly on top of that portal, start firing ultra strikes, and hope you knock off those shields. But a lot of times, they're going to be recharging on you, and you may not be able to destroy the resonators on that portal. One of the tricks I kind of do is I wait and pretend I've gone away, and then all of them look away from their phones, and then I destroy it really quickly.
He's used that on me several times.
People hacking, nice.
Linda?
Yes. So is this when there's actually somebody at the portal, or?
Sure. If you want to, anytime. Attacking
anytime. Okay, if there's no one at the portal and there's shields, one of the tricks I really liked was you can take your L5 bursters, and it's a great way to get rid of them, and stand at a distance, especially if it's heavily, like sometimes they'll put a couple of link amps, force amps on it, and it's zapping you. I literally had in my town, they used to set it up so that if you even tried to hack it, 2 hacks and you were zapped of power. So what you do is you stand back and you hit the L5s until the shield pops, and you'll see the shield pop. It's a red flash. And then you can move in with your L8s, and you don't waste as many of your good stock, because if you're out by yourself, that's something that you is going to be in demand, because you don't have another person to shoot off XMPs and share inventory to kill that portal. So that's one of my lone wolf tactics when I'm out.
Alonka.
Basically what she said, and I'd have to add just not being by myself, going with a group, and get together and target something and throw a bunch of low-level things until you see the shields pop, which is such a satisfying thing to watch it come down and then just nail it. And especially when there's a field up and you hit the vertex of a bunch of fields, you see all the fields disappear at once. That's juice.
The social aspect of it. Thank you.
So I missed the question because somebody's throwing a bunch of keys on the floor here and I've been picking them up. You? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, whoever's doing that. I've got a bunch. I'm now up to my limit now, so no more.
So the question was, when you roll up on a portal of the opposite faction, what is your favorite way of attacking it?
Yeah, I try to get the mods out first with the strikes right on it, and then just use the area stuff to cover everything else. If it's like a bunch of eights, I try to go stand on each one of the resonators. That helps a bit, too.
Yeah, to kind of talk about what Randall was just saying, particularly for newer players, you know, if you're playing by yourself and you don't have a higher level person, like when you're below level 8 and you don't have a higher level person there that can just lay waste to everything for you, or if you're higher level and you're attacking a portal that's being recharged sometimes by more than one person, if you're physically able to go stand on top of where the resonator is, you can actually use your Ultra Strikes to Ultra Strike that one resonator. And it's much harder to recharge against, particularly since a lot of the time people are recharging, doing recharge all instead of just recharging the one. Or what Chris was saying, if you kind of stop for a minute, particularly now that they've changed it to where you only get the one attack notification, if you kind of pause for a minute, they think you're done, you know. And if it's something that really needs to die and it hasn't been inoculated, you can always just flip it with a flip card. You know, I have a lot, so I've always got probably close to 100 Jarvis viruses. So if I really want it to die, it's gonna die.
So next question, and we'll start with Wendy's side, is what would you use as your tactics for defending a portal?
Give a key to Merlin. For those that aren't local, Merlin's like our rock star recharger. He's the best. But, you know, you can try recharging specifically just the highest level resonators, the most well-placed resonators. Now that they have the boost recharge, that's really nice. You know, you can kind of goose it a couple times and then go use a cube and immediately come back rather than waiting until you're running low. Because a lot of times people will, they'll pause for a minute and then they'll kind of hit you a lot at once. And so you want to have your tank as full as you can.
Randall?
I'm sorry, I was picking more keys.
Please stop dropping keys.
What's my
defense?
My defense. I'm pretty good at making sure that I get as far away as possible with a full 40 meters so I don't have all my resonators sitting in one place. That's the first thing. And then I usually throw, depending on what I have, I'll throw, if it's really important to me, I'll throw one of the rare shields and a turret. That's typically my go-to punch for those.
So for the newer players, what he's talking about with the range, your distance to the portal determines the placement of the resonator. So if you go to your max circle, that will help. The actual reason why our social gathering after this is called the Fireside Chat is because I fully expect the portals that we're sitting on to become campfired, which is our term for all the resonators being in one spot. Ilanka?
My favorite way is, again, if there's a bunch of people involved and you have team play and you say, who's attacking my portal, find out a portal that they really want to protect and call somebody and say, go attack their portal. And it distracts them and then they stop attacking yours.
Linda, you've done a bunch of anomalies.
Yeah.
You want to talk about anomaly
defense? Sure, yeah, let me tell you, when you're defending a portal at an anomaly, what you're doing is going, deploy, deploy, deploy. It's called spam deploying, and you don't stop. And if you've ever seen, it reminds me of on Star Wars when he says, he blindfolds him and says, just trust the force. Don't look at what you see, because you'll see it'll say that it's blue and it's really green because there's a little bit of a lag in the server. So you got, you know, 3,000 people all playing at the same time. So you have to keep hitting that deploy key, because one of your team's bursters is going to get in there and kill that portal, and you want to be hitting that button exactly at that second before they do. And whoever gets in there first is going to get that portal, because you got both sides spam deploying like that. So it's a little bit of luck, but a lot of it is, I see people who say, oh, it's blue, okay, and they stop, and it's captured and they don't know it, and they're missing their chance to capture it back, because as long as you're hitting this, if your team, what happens is it goes down and up, down and up, down and up, that fast at an anomaly. And it's a battle for about 10 minutes. It's like that. And you're just, it's a neck and neck, and if you don't want to run out of inventory either during that time, so you want to make sure you have plenty of resonators. I'll go to an anomaly with about 800 resonators if I'm a deployer. Wow. 800 to 1200 resonators, and go through them.
Chris, do you have anything to add?
Just if I'm defending a portal and I'm actually on the portal, one of the best things you can do is, like she said, just constantly deploy resonators. But the thing you got to remember is, if they're continuing to attack, all the other mods on the portal are going to go away, and that means they're going to be able to eventually kill your resonators faster than you can deploy them. So you got to remember to alternate between resonators and shields, which at that point you don't really want to use anything like a turret or a force amp, because they're already standing there and they want that portal. So you got to make sure you keep filling up your shields or you're going to lose the portal.
There's something else too you have to coordinate, and that is you're going to run out of energy. And so it's easier to defend a portal than to capture it back. So you don't want to lose it once you have it. And someone will say, "Oh, I need a cube," and they lose it during the time they're getting that cube because they're not defending it. And so you actually have to have a strategy in place with your team. There's hand signals and all kinds of signals they'll make that, "Hey, I'm getting a cube," so the other team makes sure to cover you.
So you're talking, there's so many different ways of defending depending on what kind of play is going on. Are you in the middle of anomaly where you've got like 50 people all in the same area, right? Or are you doing something where you're just driving along and you're seeing a portal and you're getting messages that something you've got 10 miles away is being attacked? And is it casual play or intense play or a field that's been in place for a week being very carefully maintained and all of a sudden it's attacked and how to. So there's different tactics depending on what's going on.
Right, and I'm talking anomaly.
Alanka, we'll start with you on the next question. What strategy would you use to try to maximize your AP, gaining those levels?
Be a low-level player who's traveling with much higher-level players and have them soften things up for me. just try to get the first resonator onto a portal, which gives you a lot. Be the person who puts the last resonator onto a portal. And as a higher level player, just lay waste everywhere.
Randall?
And play a lot.
I agree with that. It's sometimes I just go on walks, so I have to just hit it as I'm walking. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do is if I can take down the blue, and I'll just put a single L1 on it just to say to get that first thing and before it goes out of range.
Wendy?
For me, when I was leveling up, I spent a lot of time in cemeteries to maximize AP. Doing a lot of really densely, the little airplane, well, they call them airplane fields. Oh, I call them airplane fields, but I stole the name off of a YouTube video, but where you can take the four portals and you make the larger triangle and then the three smaller fields inside of it, and so you get an extra field's worth of AP, which over time really adds up. Being smart about your linking, fully deploying on everything, if you fully deploy and drop a couple crappy mods on it, that's 2,000 AP. Particularly when you're lower level, to level up quickly, you really want to, for those of you who are old enough to remember the Fraggles, you really want to be a doozer. You get more AP for building always than you do for destroying. You're helping out your team. But you get more AP for building than you do for destroying. So it's the fastest way to level up. Learning how to link and field efficiently is the best way to level if you're in a portal dense area.
Linda?
True. The question again, I'm sorry.
Maximizing AP.
Maximizing AP.
Anything to add?
Yes. For me, I'm not very good at maximizing AP.
Just play lots.
Actually, my town has 70 portals in about a 3-block range. It's a small town, and it's very safe for me to be out there at all hours of the night. And so if I see it all green, and I've had a bad day especially, it's great to go out there. And you just you're the Hulk going through there, blowing, seeing all that red. And killing all the portals, and then deploying on all of them, hacking all of them, linking them all up as best, you know, with the highest number of fields. They're all micro. I actually think I have 700. I actually just got a million recently, but I had 700,000 MU, and I was kind of proud of them because about 500,000 of them came at one MU at a time, because I liked one. I like baby fields of one MU. So I think that that's just about as good as one giant field that makes half a million. But so I will do that, make a million one MU fields, and at the end of the night, I think I can get about 200 to 250,000 AP out of my town without walking around. So it takes a long time. It takes me about 6 or 7 hours to do it, but I do it.
So Chris, beyond level 8, there's other ways to maximize.
Oh yeah, beyond level 8, there's definitely some better ways to maximize your AP. And I would like to interject on the cemetery note. You wouldn't normally be walking through a cemetery in the middle of the night by yourself, but on Ingress you might.
Nice. You really should at night.
The Roswell Cemetery is open, sort of. You're mostly driving, but...
I was in a cemetery one night, and I had a pond, and I was driving around the pond, and it was a hot night, and I had my window open, and I heard splashing noises in the pond and had a heart attack. I literally had a heart attack, but I had to decide whether I went at the portal more than to figure out what was coming out of that pond. And it was a really hard decision. Yeah. I was sat there for a second deciding what I should do.
Yeah. You also have the issue of, you know, you're driving around someplace late at night and there's a ton of portals. There's like 50 portals in a 3-block radius, and you're driving and you're driving, just pause and drive and pause and drive and pause. And the cops come up going, what the hell are you doing?
Oh, so that's a good question. How do you explain that when you get pulled over by authority?
It really depends. I kind of look at the cop and I think, are they a gamer? You know, no. If they're a geek, I might show the thing to them. Even if they're not a geek, I might show the thing to them and say,
interesting.
But generally with cops, I'm pretty honest. And okay. I might say, oh, I'm beta testing a game. And then it just like goes right over their head and they let me go on. But they'll say, you were stopping and starting. I've had this happen. Okay. You were stopping and starting and stopping and starting. And they're looking at me and it's clear I'm not drunk, but I'm stopping and starting and stopping and starting. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can say within the first 2 months of Ingress, our local town would be like, are y'all playing that game? Yes. All right, you can reach the portal from that side of the street. Don't be on this side. And this is at like 3 in the morning, and there's like 10 of us just walking down the street. So.
May I interject something real quick on cemeteries?
Sure.
Please be aware of your local laws. Like, I know certain places in Alabama, cemeteries close at night. Period. End story.
That goes for anything.
At sunset, yeah.
It does vary, because a lot of cemeteries, they're integrated with some local road systems, so in the cases of those cemeteries, you can still be there after dark, provided you're not being disruptive.
There are public cemeteries, public parks, private cemeteries. Yeah. Respect where you are and the hours posted.
But there are a lot of sculpture parks that are open late at night, and you can go to
generally,
those.
If you're not sure if whether or not you're allowed to be there, not getting a ticket for trespassing over GPS-enabled words with friends is usually the better option.
There's portals everywhere. Find those. Yeah.
But back to the original question, maximizing AP past level 8, what I usually do is I will wait until somebody has completely built up like a whole city block, and then I will just walk in there and just stand in the middle and just start firing XMPs and just watch it go 2,000, 3,000, 5,000. And that's going to crank your AP more than anything else, because building is the largest amount of AP that you can get, but you can get it a heck of a lot faster destroying it.
A time to AP ratio. I understand that.
Yeah.
So our next question is, what do you consider your local area, and what do you typically do on a regular basis in that area? Who wants to kick us off?
I'll start.
Okay, go for it.
I'm from the Detroit area, and so I live actually in one of the suburbs, and at first we didn't have a lot of portals. We only had 8. So really I would play those 8 portals but get bored, and so
I hadn't actually been to downtown Detroit for probably 10 years because it was, you know, it wasn't that safe. Yeah, I had this, you always had this feeling from watching the news, it was, you just didn't want to go down there, you're going to be shot at, or I had a few friends that were robbed down there, and so I hadn't gone down there, and one of the Ingress players group was going down there, and they said, "Do you want to ride with me?" And I said, "Sure." So I'll be with a bunch of people. It's safe. That's safe. And they started going through all these neighborhoods and down the Cass Corridor and Woodward Avenue and areas I was always told to avoid. And we were playing Ingress. We got out of our car and we were walking around, and it was late at night. And I was like playing, and then all of a sudden it just dawned on me. I'm like, wow, I'm in downtown Detroit at night, and nobody's shooting at me. and nobody's shooting at me. And I thought, wow, all my, you know, for the last 10 years, I've been led to believe that this is a dangerous place and you're going to be hurt if you come here, and nobody's hurting us. And we went like several nights, and it really impressed me. And I started seeing parts of Detroit that had grown in the last 10 years and really blossomed. And I thought, wow, I got to let my friends know things have really gotten good down here. And it's not the place that we were, you know, that it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So I started inviting my friends to come down and play with me, and that's when I first started getting really active community-wise with Ingress.
But it's also safer because you're driving past the bars.
Yeah. People say, I don't drink, I have an Ingress problem.
There's a slogan with Ingress that the world around you is not what it seems. And for me, I guess the perception of the city that I live in is completely changed because of Ingress.
Me too.
Plus, is that person who is looking at their phone attacking my portal?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Wendy, you were going to say
something? I was going to say, my perspective on Atlanta has changed completely. Like, I lived here for a while when I was a child, but I moved back here, you know, on my own in the mid-90s. And I know my way around the city so much better after having played Ingress for the last year. I joke that I can tell you where every church in town is, but beyond that, like the way that all the different little sub neighborhoods knit together, or really cool restaurants that I found because of this game, because I've been out driving out to get some portal at like 2 a.m. and I see something, I'm like, oh, that's cool, I should come back to that later. You know, we have a really vibrant public art scene here in Atlanta that I'd honestly never really noticed. You know, and there's all these really cool murals everywhere that I had never noticed before playing this game. But to kind of backtrack to the question, the reason that I was kind of like, when you're asking me is, you know, you're talking about your local area, but, you know, I find that wanting to explore more because of the things that I do find playing, you know, I was out in like Lithia Springs yesterday, which is some southwestern suburb that I've lived here 20 years, I'd never been to. You know, and there's some neat old buildings out there that I'd never seen before. You know, so I guess I would say my local area is everything north of the Nat Line now. You know, which is like middle Georgia.
So that gives a good example of town, city, half the state, wherever you're willing to drive. So expanding local into regional, and you can talk about this with me, Randall, on this.
Okay.
Expanding into regional and global operations, what are some of the cool stories you've heard from a larger perspective?
Well, I was going to answer the previous question first.
Go for it.
Okay. I live in Portland, Oregon, but I work mostly in Santa Monica, California. And if I'm taking the trolley from my house down to the PDX, the airport that I fly out of, the trolley goes slow enough that it stays below the 40 kilometer per hour, whatever the thing is. So I'm like hitting every single portal all the way there. So I get like 60 or 70 in a row right there, which is really fun. At least hit them, at least hack them. Actually, when we're stopped, sometimes I take over a blue. I go, go, no, stop, wait. So it's like that. And in Santa Monica, there's a wonderful little stretch of street, Third Street Promenade, for those of you who've been there. And it's pedestrian only, and it's 3 blocks long with 22 portals. So every time we go to lunch together, they can see me with my phone out going all the way. And I always say, let's pick the restaurant way down at the end over there. That's where I want to go to eat lunch today. And so those are really my two home areas. And they've been very useful for me over the last 11 months. So, yeah.
And I'd say the same thing about ingressing. And it's a location-based game, and I go back and forth on, I find it difficult to play more than one location-based game at a time. So ingress is location-based, geocaching is location-based. So if I'm big into geocaching, it's tough to be ingressing. And if I'm big into ingressing, it's tough to be geocaching. But when I'm into ingressing, like I get invited to New York to a big event at Lincoln Center. And rather than take a subway somewhere, I wanted to take surface transport. The slower, the better.
It makes frequent stops.
Yeah, I want lots of traffic signals in the way because I'm just hitting every portal on the way. And even then, when I'm at the presentation, you know, and there's a big reception and there's formal gowns and everything, and I'm like, I got 10 minutes, you know, and I go and I hit all the portals around the center. Nice. And then go back in, and so it's great. Every place I'm invited to, I'm like you said, learning more of the city, learning more of the area because of all the portals.
And you probably find that when you get into, sit down at a table at that event, and it's time to start talking, you know, you can say, hey, gee, did you know that there's like this really beautiful fountain over in this building? You know, or you can start, you can actually have something to talk about too, additional things to talk about and point people in the direction of things they might miss. And they'll say like, well, how do you know that? But I think it's neat.
So larger operations, Linda, you've been a part of several.
Yeah.
Beyond regional.
The first one was called Links Across America. First, the way I had the idea was to, I thought it'd be fun to have a link race, like start in New York, and the blue team and the green team would try to link all the way across from portal to portal, all the way across to the West Coast. This is before there were link amps. And we'd race and see who could get to the other coast first, link by link. But that was kind of, there was a lot of problems associated with doing it that way, so we kind of set it aside. And on Memorial Day came up, and a friend of mine said, I'm traveling, I'm moving this weekend across the country. Is there anybody that needs some keys moved? And someone else said, yeah, I'm on vacation too. And so we said, we should make a spread. So many people were moving around that weekend that they were going to start a spreadsheet of key movement. And I was looking at it going, wow, a lot of people are really traveling. We could, because one of the problems was key movement from to the next cities. And I thought, well, they could move, people traveling could move the keys. And there's a lot of people traveling, so the key movement won't be a problem at all. And it'd be a fun thing to do along on your trip. As you'd go down, you know, as you head out west or head out east, you could throw links for us. So I thought, okay, well, we can link. And I had been involved in the 80s in links across, in Hands Across America. We held hands across America, and it was very successful. And that was word of mouth. There was no internet. There was no social media. There was no cell phones. And we did quite a bit. And I thought, we can do this with this game. We can link across America. And so I thought, let's see if we can do it. And we thought, well, the only way it'll work, if we do just blue team do it, the green team will throw links and try to block it. And so we can't have both, you know, we can't have just one team doing it. We need both teams cooperating so that we're not blocking each other, because we want to be successful and see if we can get these links all the way across. And there were rogue people along the way as we tried to do this that were like, no, you're not going to put that link through my county. I'm going to stop you, you know. And we would talk to them and negotiate, and they would do it. And but because it was Memorial Day weekend, I decided to call it, I decided to link together in the holiday theme of war memorials. And I thought, we in my own town, we had a brand new, I don't know, you've all probably been to war memorials in your town, and I don't know if you've all seen the new ones with a really pretty engraving on them. They were really beautiful, and I thought, well, this will get everybody in their town to see these new war memorials that are going up. And there's some, that's something that's all the way across the country, and where we were, if there wasn't a war memorial, you could do a military base. And I got my own trail was to go from Columbus to St. Louis, and I was going to go Columbus, Liberty, Indiana, Dayton, Liberty, and then Indianapolis and St. Louis. And so I got to Columbus, and I was only expecting two or three players, and I had really didn't have a lot of volunteers, it felt like. I really couldn't tell. I just thought, we're just going to, if I can link from Columbus to St. Louis, I'll be happy, and I'll work that part. And everybody else said they were going to do it, and I just trusted they were going to do it, and I hoped they would, but I was just focusing on my part. And when I got to, and I knew Columbus was going to link to Gettysburg, and that was successful, had already been successful, so I was like, oh, we're going to go Gettysburg to St. Louis. That's even, you know, if we do that, it's a success to me. And when I got there to Columbus, there was a woman there, and she had a folded flag, and she was crying, and she said, this flag has flown over Afghanistan, and thank you for linking us together. We started talking to the people in the next town, and I realized that there were a lot of military people that were playing the game, and veterans, and this was really more, there was a whole crowd there at that war memorial, and I realized at that moment that, oh my gosh, this is more than a game. They said, thank you. This is a way for us to remember somebody or be with the families that lost someone. And I went, my gosh, this game can be so much more. And it really hit me hard. And we made 8,000 miles of links that day, wow. That weekend. And we did not only a blue link across America and a green link across America, but we made two sets, one north and one south. So we didn't know how we were going to get over the mountains, and this guy, he calls me and he says, I'm on the road, and he says, my name is Hunter West and I know how to get them across the mountains. I said, what? And he says, there's a portal on the top of this mountain in the middle, and I'm going to go climb it for you, and we're going to throw that link. Aww. And this guy, wow, climbed a mountain so we could finish, wow, get our link across the mountains. So it's amazing. So that's my, I'm sorry, I didn't need to talk
about that. We are tight on time, so I'm going to, I was hoping we'd have more questions, time available for questions from the audience, but we definitely will when we all go upstairs. So, Chris, you want to mention one other big op?
Let's see, big ops. There were a few of them that we did in Atlanta during things like Connected Cell. Things like we linked a bunch of parks together, and we centered it all on a military base called Dobbins Air Force Base, and that's just where we started layering a lot of our fields. And we didn't know any of the parks or the cities that we were linking to, so we had to go and. People who were planning it didn't, so we had to go and find people who lived in those parts of town and be like, so what do you know about this area? How can I get there and how late can I be there and that kind of thing, because you've got to coordinate all of that. But a cool story I wanted to go in real quick, but she was talking about a lot of military people play Ingress, and on Dobbins Air Force Base, there's actually a portal there called the I believe it is the MIA Soldiers Wall, mm-hmm. And they actually had a project where they were remodeling that memorial, and one of our guys was there and said, hey guys, they are accepting donations for the families of MIA soldiers, and you can get to be a part of this memorial. So we actually, the Atlanta Resistance raised the largest non-corporate donation that was given to that fund, and they put a brick in the wall that says Atlanta Resistance that is still there today.
Wow. Just because we're local, I know we've got a lot of people in here that aren't local, but has anybody seen the picture of the cross-faction bat field? Giant, yes. that weren't a part of it? So that was, just for those of you who don't know, there was an event that happened. I'm not going to go into too many details, but a tragic event happened around one of our players, the first level 16 in Atlanta, hardcore player, and the cross-faction group came together in memory of that and made a giant bat field in his name. The agent's name was Dark Knight, so that's why we did the bat field. But it was cross-faction group, got together, planned it out, initiated it. It started with a big dinner and everybody hanging out. But tied in with that was a lot of, was several different little projects where some swag was made and some memorial patches and things like that to raise money to help the family of that tragic event. And it was amazing to see a community come together, and I was surprised. It was something local. It was really important to us locals. I was surprised at how global that went, and a lot of people still talk about it. So that's probably one of my favorites. Okay.
I haven't done any global events yet, so no big things.
So talking briefly about swag on that, what is your favorite swag that you have seen and or collected, Wendy?
So, gosh, there's actually a really cool swag community. The most recent thing that I got is they're like baseball agent cards, which are really neat. One of our locals had t-shirts made for our late night players that I was going to be wearing, but I'm a slacker and forgot to go back to my car and get them. But there are these really cool, like, glow-in-the-dark dragons for our night crew. Chris actually has a really cool challenge coin that I'm sure he'll show you upstairs if he makes it up there. You know, there's a lot of really inventive, creative, GT Fireball's got this cool hoodie from Shonen. Like, there's just all sorts of really neat stuff.
So swag comes from not just... A lot of swag is community-based, a lot of player-made, based around events like his hoodie, based around an area like his challenge coin. But there's also... I know there's some questions about some of the rule changes with Niantic and different things around swag and what's official versus what's allowed for communities. And from what I understand, it's as long as you're not trying to make money off of it.
Don't sell it. It's more, they want you to be able to go in, like if your team, like you have a team jacket there, everybody gets together on the team, they come up with a symbol for their team and or for the event, and they all chip in for t-shirts or jackets. That's great. They love that. And it's more the people you'll see if you go on eBay or if you go on Etsy. You'll see people that are just making straight up logo stuff. It's not team oriented and selling it at a profit. That's copyrighted material. And Niantic was recently, you know, we've got all these new investors, and you know, what you're investing in when you invest in a company is the logos and the copyrights and the patents. And so they just spent a lot of money to buy those items, and so just, you know, they're going to protect that investment. But yeah, they love the team stuff, and the team stuff is great. And
we have license. There are companies that are licensed on swag and stuff. We've got like Hint Water, which you've heard, and if anybody heard about it earlier, we had a hint code out. There's like the Anker batteries. They have the faction logo batteries. There's a lot of different things that are official. The Roxo bands, for example, that I'm wearing. There are licensed materials out there, and there's more to come, right?
Right, that's correct. The Hint Water has a code under the cap, as a matter of fact. Yeah. You get a lot of gear out of that. There's headphones, Sennheiser headphones. They're always adding new sponsors. And in-game, I like the way that they do in-game sponsorship that's not, instead of popping up ads in your face, it's part of your inventory, and I really love that. Yeah, we have the MUFG capsule, which is a bank. And we have SoftLink, which is SoftBank. SoftBank.
SoftBank Ultralink.
SoftBank
lets you throw more links out of a portal.
That's a wireless company in Japan. So AXA Shields. And if you get a chance, go on to YouTube and look for the AXA. There's an AXA video for, if you just put in AXA Ingress, it should come up. It's a really cute commercial about playing Ingress, and it's this couple that, from both sides, that meet while they're playing, and it's like a Romeo and Juliet. It's really funny. I love it. It's like my favorite Ingress video.
I feel like they stole that. For those of you who know me. I'm sorry, guys. We are actually out of time. We have so much stuff that we wanted to cover, but... in like 15 minutes, you will find us all upstairs doing it all over again. Telling stories, ask questions. That's what we're here for. Linda's going to have swag and stuff.
So
we are going to be upstairs on the 19th floor. There's a landing there. So hop on the elevator and join us upstairs. Thanks for coming out.